Don't mess with the best, man, because the best don't mess.
It's time to talk.
Your thoughts.
I do genuinely think it does that with the parents.
For me, he was the bridge between myself and my untapped potential.
Flattery will get you nowhere in here.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I couldn't even answer her because, you know what, she wasn't wrong.
The voice of Cork.
Be part of the conversation, as always, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. There's a lot of different strands to the conflict in the Middle East and down around the Gulf and Iran and Israel and America and many other countries on board. Now, headline in the Sun this morning that America is telling the world that the Iran regime is toast and they know it. Meanwhile, of course, the consequences of that for many people has to do with oil, petrol prices, how it's going to impact on energy costs in general, including utilities like gas and electricity. So there's going to be a probe now, apparently, in this country by the Commission for Regulation of Utilities to look into the possibility of price gouging and greed. And that's making a lot of the papers. Do they take us for fuels? Is the headline in the Sun this morning. They also in the Mirror break down what the cost will be to fill up your car. See Mary Lou McDonald in the... we had lots of examples of it yesterday. For sure we did, from the good people of Cork and what have you. But she was talking about a 94-year-old woman who saw the cost of half a tank of home heating oil rise by €400 last week. She was being quoted €464 for a 500-litre fill. And it went from 464 in a matter of 24 hours to €879. Now, Micheál Martin has said that prices of the forecourt shouldn't have increased. And he said it should take 3 to 4 weeks following any particular event for prices to be impacted. But they shouldn't be impacted at all. I mean, Trump himself has guaranteed free passage of fuel through the Middle East, so there should be no shortages. Ours is coming from the North Sea anyway when it comes to oil and what have you. So really, I mean, you can sugarcoat this all you want, but really, it has got to be. I mean, anyway, the fuel that's on the forecourts and petrol stations has been there for quite a while, hasn't it? It was bought in the not too distant past, but certainly bought and paid for, you would think, weeks before any conflict started in the first place. But they're saying, but the global market stock is driven up by, conditions or the climate of world affairs. I don't buy any of that, to be quite honest. And then there's an €800 fare to fly vulnerable citizens home. That's been called a rip-off by some. The first of the flights actually has landed now, and a second one will land in the next 24 hours or so, probably sooner. But that's making the papers today, where Minister McEntee is defending the fact that the government is charging €800 to fly vulnerable citizens home, and the first of them have arrived. Now, to be honest with you, children fly for free. And she said, we make sure the children fly free and that the bus that brought them to Oman was also free. And it's a knockdown price at €800 per flight. Middle East evacuation makes all of the papers. And at least they got it done. The first one flew and arrived. The first one out of the UK was stranded on the tarmac and didn't take off. But so it's the second flight now we're looking towards, which should take off today for Dublin, out of the war zone, with another 400 people on board. There's 24,000 people, mind you, Irish citizens, who have actually registered with the Department of Foreign Affairs. So that's what's happening there with regards to everything to do with issues involving the war and conflict. But there are other people who are flying overseas while Irish people are coming home. And that includes, according to the Mail this morning, members of the Department of Housing in Ireland who are going off to an event in the French Riviera city of Cannes. And this event is being paid for by property developers. You would think all of that would be well behind us, but housing officials heading to an event abroad paid for by developers. Nothing to see here, they might say. It's a €300,000 soiree. And you've got to wonder about that, whether it's the right decision and the right judgment. And then, of course, issues involving the family that has become known now very much right across the world. And a lot of the world is very divided on the Burke family, particularly in America. You see a lot of commentators saying, how in the name of God is Ireland doing this to a family? But the headline making the Star this morning is Send In the Clowns. Enoch's mum and sister have been ordered to jail for 2 weeks now. So that's a front pager. Enoch Burke's mother and sister have been jailed. The judge said that this family circus has to end. And it's long past time for the court to call a halt to this family circus, says the judge. Apparently, by all accounts, they believe family members, including Martina Burke's mother, or sorry, Enoch Burke's mother, Martina, believes that she has a right to shout at the judge anytime she wants on whatever issue she wants. And the judge is saying, I'm not having any of this. So he's ordered that they be brought to prison. And that's what's happened. And it's picked up in the Red Tops today, where they say both have been jailed for 2 weeks because of their behaviour. But I don't see this being resolved anytime soon. The resolve of the Burke family is not to back down at any time. So there's other issues in the courts as well this morning. Barry Roach in the Irish Times talks about an horrific experience on Leaside in the recent past that resulted in a court appearance yesterday for a man called Martin Ekhozui, a 22-year-old. So, I mean, he got a very hefty sentence yesterday in court, I can tell you. He was sentenced to 11 years in jail with the final 2 years suspended by Judge Sinead Behan. So he's a 22-year-old who subjected two students to an hour-long terrifying ordeal when he and an accomplice threatened at knife point that they would cut off their fingers if they didn't hand over cash and drugs. So apparently, I'm reading from some of the evidence in court yesterday, one of them was wearing an all-black tracksuit, a black ski mask, blue latex gloves, and had a large chef's kitchen knife with a black handle. The second fellow was also wearing a black tracksuit, black gloves. He had a flathead screwdriver in his hand. And they arrived anyway to this house where these two students were in, demanding money, demanding to know where the cocaine was, demanding to know where the cash was. At one stage, one of them shouted, I'll start cutting off fingers on my mother's life if I don't start finding something soon. They eventually took €30 in cash and took the phones, but there was a glove left behind by them, and that glove then was forensically checked by detectives and found matching fingerprints of Martin Ekhozui. He had 14 previous convictions, ladies and gentlemen, including 3 for having drugs for his own use, 1 for drug dealing, 1 for laundering, 2 for possession of knives, and 1 for the production of an article in the course of a dispute, and all sorts of stuff like that. Anyway, the guards put a stop to their gallop anyway, and your man got, I mean, 9 years, he got 11 with 2 suspended. 9 years, very hefty sentence, but that all sentencing should be so tough. What do you think of that? Text 0868 104 106. Really sad story makes the Irish Times this morning, where we look back at times long gone now, but not forgotten. You know of the redress board against, you know, state institutions, mother and baby homes, and there is, you know, a fairly poor uptake with regards to people who would have gone through or had babies or were themselves in state institutions. And you know, there's still financial compensation available to people. But what interested me from the Irish Times is it also includes children who were boarded out. Does anybody remember the term being boarded out? And I don't mean going to a boarding school for education. I'm talking about where small children and young children, you know, sometimes as young as 8 and 9 and 10 years old, were boarded out to farmers to work for free. Slave labour, if you like. And this was happening right up to, I would imagine it would be fair to say, right up to the 1970s. Now, there was a general apology from the Taoiseach, and rightly so, to all people who were incarcerated in state institutions or had times in mother and baby homes and what they went through. But in the 1970s, it was quite common for the state institutions to farm out children to farms. And in many cases, they were treated then as free labour, which is another way of putting slave labour, if you like. And they give an example of that, actually, in the Times this morning, of a man called James Sugrew, who's 74 now. He survived boarding out with his two brothers to farms. He's from Ballybunion originally. He said he spent 11 years on a local farm. He was sexually abused and beaten, and he didn't see his other brother for over 10 years. He had a brother called Michael who died when he was 40, having spent years not being able to come to terms with what happened to him as a child. It was absolutely horrifically cruel. That's a front page of making the Times this morning. We remember very, very sad and very cruel days, times I should say. And then the Examiner has a quote from Gerry Buttimer, the TD, who says that driving in traffic in Cork is like driving downtown New York. He actually says in the Examiner that I was in Carrigaline yesterday. It was like being downtown New York with the volume of traffic. And I don't know Have they any, I mean, they're making observations about chronic traffic, and it is, and it's not getting any better in spite of, you know, whatever you want to say about the Dunkittle roundabout and things like that. But the state of the roads are just beyond appalling. You've got to have the worst roads in Europe now at this stage and maybe further afield. But he talks then in the article about all sorts of ways that it will be put right, including in the coming years, a better bus and rail networks and, you know, improving, I suppose, infrastructure for walking and cycling. And at some stage, not in my lifetime, I'd say, a Cork-Lewis light rail network. I hope he eat my words on that one. And then, of course, talking about Carrigaline, It's alarming, actually, that a school would close, and this is Carrigaline Community Special School, and it remains closed this week because of staff sustaining injuries from students. Now, these students have their own particular needs, and we need to bear that in mind. But the story says, and Donegal Callan says that, or Lira, says Donegal Lira, the TD, Sinn Féin TD, says it's extremely rare for a school to close in this kind of manner. It was described as, having to close because of children who had become dysregulated, which is an interesting word. And the school has experienced a very significant increase, apparently, in injuries to staff. So that's unfortunate, isn't it? Perhaps you might be a parent listening to me, you'd like to contribute to that. Text 0868104106. And then there's many stories involving children of all sorts of shapes and sizes. And I think shapes and sizes is the word to use. Because you look at world obesity now, they're saying that there could be, in the next 10 to 15 years, as if the figure wasn't high enough, there could be 220 million children on the planet who would be obese, overweight. And they're looking particularly at 5 to 19-year-olds. It already stands globally at, I think, in and around 120, 130 million children of school-going age who have problems with regards to chronic disease because of their, we call it BMI. It's a rather inaccurate way of measuring a person's weight or what they need to do with regards to losing weight, but it's the only one we have. So it would be they'd have a BMI of 30 or higher. These are could be a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old, or perhaps even younger. And it's destined to continue to increase. In fact, this morning, The Sun is saying that one in three children leaving primary school in the UK is overweight or obese. One in three. And I think that figure is accurate as well for Ireland, being one in three. And much of it, of course, has to do with the food that we eat and a lack of exercise. But now in the UK, they are trialling weight loss jabs paid for on the NHS for kids as young as 10. And they're giving them things like Wegovy, weight loss jabs, in some kind of an effort to try and reduce their food cravings. But there are side effects to all of these things. And The Sun this morning talks about nausea, diarrhea, stomach cramps and vision problems as a consequence. But what's very interesting about it is you see from time to time this particular story that makes the papers about people who quit the fat jabs. That's what the Mail referred to them this morning as, fat jabs, before you start jumping on over me. But people who quit fat jabs pile on most of the weight again within a calendar year. And I've often wondered about that. They're saying, therefore, to maintain the weight that you've lost on, say, Mounjaro, you need to stay on it for life. Now, what's happening with these kind of injectables is there are people also micro-dosing on them, as in taking smaller amounts and maintaining whatever weight they want by micro-dosing. But you gain more than two-thirds of the weight that you lose within a year. And that's a study they have. And it's Mounjaro or Ozempic. And 75% of what you lost goes on within 12 months. But I'm just wondering they said if you stop the jabs, you get insatiable hunger cravings, much worse than you ever had before. That's what they're saying about it. But maybe that's a fact. But if you lost an awful lot of weight on injectables, right, and you changed your relationship with food as a consequence, and you started to think healthier with regards to the food you ate for the rest of your life, surely you would maintain the weight loss. Anyway, your thoughts on that are welcome. Text 0868104106. And there's another one that makes the English Times. The many things that we take for granted that we shouldn't take for granted. One is that you don't necessarily cognitively decline as you get older, right? But you have to take steps at a younger age or all through your life to make sure of that. So if you had this kind of belief that it's inevitable that people will disimprove mentally and physically as they grow older, that isn't necessarily the case. A widespread assumption that you will, but it doesn't necessarily follow. I mean, I often talk to people on the air here who are cognitively as sharp as a pin in their 80s and 90s, but I imagine a lot of that has to do with the fact that they have remained socially active, kept up a good bunch of friends around them, that they exercised, that they didn't smoke or at least gave up, and they eat healthy. And it can make a huge, huge difference in staving off slow deterioration as the years go by. I'm just mentioning it because it makes the papers this morning in the UK. And then, of course, we've got a couple of films or movies, whatever happened to yourself. You might be a big fan of Game of Thrones. They've now just handed over the new script to Warner Brothers to get on with making the movie. So that's something to look forward to, another Game of Thrones film on the way. And, of course, tomorrow we have the Peaky Blinders film hitting the cinemas, The Immortal Man being released tomorrow. And that's going to be something really and truly well worth waiting for. And then, just finally for now, and I may well come back to this throughout the course of the morning, we're counting down tomorrow to World Book Day, although I believe that some schools are actually allowing it to happen today. Is it World Book Day, some are asking, though, or is it just another excuse for a fancy dress in school? I'm hearing that some parents are fed up of the amount of pressure they're being put up under. There's something going on all the time, and this is just adding more extra pressure and more commercialism because of World Book Day, where all of the boys and girls are just going in as their favourite soccer players, are putting on their soccer kits, when it's supposed to do with books or literary characters. Some are suggesting that it's becoming nothing more than a second Halloween, as if parents have enough to be doing with without having to magic up some expensive Instagram-worthy outfit. I'd say at this stage, is it a bit too late now today for mammies and daddies to get out the Singer sewing machine and try and fashion something at home?
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
Pick up the phone, 0818 104 106. We've got a travel update for you here at the moment. And I know there was a lot happening this morning on breakfast. People are just driving like lunatics a lot of the time when the weather is very bad. Reports of a collision westbound on the N25. It'd be Junction 3 between Junction 3 Cove and Junction 2 Little Island. You know what I'm talking about. Take care and approach there. Collision on the westbound lane. Text 0868 104 106. There are others. See that one from the NCT? They posted a photograph there yesterday. They said, and I see the photograph, the car is in an appalling state. Whatever it was, a car or a, I don't know, is it a van or a lorry? Or, I don't think it was a lorry. It looks like maybe it was just the back seats of a car. A vehicle recently arrived for testing after giving a lift to a few sheep. Safe to say it was more farmyard chic than NCT ready. You probably wouldn't want a tester getting into your car after that one, so please make sure your vehicle is clean before your NCT. Cross-contamination between vehicles can occur. They said the customer was refunded their test fee and asked to come back when they cleaned the vehicle for a new test. The back of it is absolutely, totally and utterly destroyed, the back seats. I mean, like, think about being so disrespectful. Do you think that it would be okay to present for an NCT and not giving a thought about it meanwhile? But anyway, that's just a motoring related one for you. Something I dealt with yesterday, actually, and it's quite interesting because it was in Aldi at the weekend, right? Chic or chic? The jury's still out on that word. I know, you have one way of saying, I mean, I just don't know what to do about it.
20 years I'm listening to you
20 years,
chic.
The same word.
20 years I'm listening to you saying chic.
Yeah.
And how many times in that time have I said it's chic?
Yeah, but if it was chic, it would be S-H-E-E-K. Actually, that's cheek then, isn't it? I don't know. It just comes out wrong every time.
It does, yeah. It needs to stop. It actually gives me the R every single time
chic.
I hear it. It's not chic, it's chic.
Chic. Chic is S-H-E-I-K.
Yeah, what were those words you were asking me about? Yeah,
I just can't get, I can't sense. Fix that word. It's just, it's a blockage I have.
I know, it'll have to stop though, because it's very annoying.
Is it?
It is.
Oh, geez, I was mansplaining yesterday, and today it's mispronunciation. You got the serious hump with me. No, but seriously, I was in Aldi at the weekend, and I think this is sad. I really and truly do. I saw alarm stickers on blocks of Kerrygold butter, and I thought to myself, oh my God, has it got that bad now? Okay, you got shoplifters and thieves, right, who have enough money but just shoplift and rob. But there must be a case being made now for people who are saying, I just don't have the money. I can buy a few bits, but I have to rob another few. So you see alarm stickers now on Kerrygold butter. For a long time, we've seen alarm stickers on steak, alarm stickers on chicken. And I'm sure you're listening to me. You can text other examples of things. Razor blades are another one, stuff like that. But it got me thinking about that because I knew I was going to be talking to Kevin Hurley, who runs four city centre central stores with his brother Brian. And they got another two then, one in Bishopstown, another one in Mallow. And they're talking about the scourge of shoplifting and theft. Joins me by the phone. Kevin, good morning.
Hi, Neil. Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for taking the call. So just on that point, it is kind of sad, though, isn't it, at the same time, when you see alarm stickers on staples like chicken or butter, isn't it?
Well, I think it's always been on the stake for the last 2 years. I would have seen it myself in supermarkets, and we would have it in our store in Mallow and in Bishopstown. But the butter, no, is a new one for me.
Yeah.
But I suppose this all came to light this week, Neil, when there was a survey done by a European company in relation to not just Ireland and, you know, what was the items that were stolen the most in supermarkets across Europe. And it's 100%, it's alcohol that is the most stolen items. And that's what we're dealing with in our stores, unfortunately.
Mm. What else besides, I come back to the alcohol, but what else? Is it like a top three or a top five or what?
Well, I suppose it depends on the store. You know, our store out in Bishopstown would have a lot of groceries and a lot of kind of high value stuff. Like, you know yourself, if you're buying washing tablets these days, they're kind of 12, 13 euros. So items like that would be stolen. Meat is a big one to be stolen. You know, in the city centre, we would have kind of lower value items being stolen as well. You know, kids stealing bottles of Coca-Cola or Red Bull and stuff like that. But primarily, really, it's alcohol. That's our main issue.
Mm. So you'd now have a security bill for the four city centre stores that runs annually to €250,000 as a consequence of this, right?
Yeah, that would be our static security guards, which are the guys that are just in the stores in the afternoon and the evening, protecting our staff and protecting the fixtures and fittings and protecting the stock. But primarily it's safety for the staff. And then our CCTV, you know, we've got very, very good quality CCTV, and we liaise with the Gardaí all the time, you know, when there are issues, even if there's issues outside of the store. You know, Patrick Street is a hotspot. Grand Parade, as we know, is a hotspot. Oliver Plunkett Street can be as well. So, you know, if the guards come in looking for the footage, we give it to them, and we have the highest grade of that. So, but primarily the static security would be it's a big cost, and it's factored into our business model, and you know, that's life, unfortunately.
Yeah. When you talk of alcohol theft, is it like all sorts of different types of alcohol?
Well, it's mainly beer and what they call the alcopops, the ready to drink. So the likes of Four Loko, Buzz Balls, these ones, they love those. So last Saturday morning, we just opened the doors at 7 a.m. and the delivery had arrived in. And as I'm sure you know, you can't sell alcohol before 10:30. And the delivery had arrived in, and a guy came in off the street and lifted a case of Four Loko off one of the combis. And
what's a combi?
Combi is like a cage. It's like a cage with wheels. You would see them being delivered into centres and supervalues all the time. So
gotcha.
He lifted the case of Four Loko off the combi and did a runner. And obviously he was caught. You know, we called the guards. They came in. They knew him. They caught him. But the Four Loko was either drank or stashed. I'm not sure, but we didn't get it back.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing we're dealing with on a daily basis. But I would just have to add in, Neil, that the new Gardaí presence that has, you know, started since before Christmas has been an absolute game changer for Cork City. It has completely transformed the city. You're walking down Patrick Street now, Pat Brown Thomas, for example, and there's a stationary guard there. You know, there's one outside McDonald's on Dawn Square. And, you know, there's always guards around since before Christmas, and long may that continue, because it's certainly been a deterrent for shoplifting and for antisocial behaviour.
Okay, just on that point, I'm glad to hear that, because there were some people yesterday questioning as to whether they had backed off on those patrols. They're supposed to be 11 by day and 12 by night. Are you saying that the full complement are operational every day?
From what I can see, Neil, I'm in the city 6 days a week. Maybe one or two days there might have been a little bit lacking. And I don't know the reason for that. But to be fair, yesterday I was in the city centre all day. There was a full complement of them. Tuesday was the same. Monday was the same. Possibly last week, one or two days, there might have been a little bit lighter. But in general, I think it's very, very good. And as I say, you know, long may it continue. I was president of the Cork Business Association for 2 years. And that was my key call out as president, that we wanted the city safer. We wanted the city cleaner. And, you know, you've been an advocate for that, to be fair to you and the guys on the show. And that's a really, really good thing. And long may it continue as the tourist season approaches.
So could I just ask you, you know, with regards to, say, the alcohol theft, if that's beer or alcopops or say, for instance, wine, Is that a particular cohort of individuals that might have addiction issues or may well be rough sleepers or have a lot of issues in their life?
Okay, so you've got two types of shoplifters. You've obviously got the people that are in addiction, and you know that's very, very unfortunate. And they're the ones that don't have any money in their pocket. They need to feed their habits, yeah. So they are coming in buying alcohol. However, we do have the opportunist shoplifters as well. So the likes of the people who we had a robbery in our store in Bishopstown last week, €560 worth of stock stolen. None of it was alcohol. It was all groceries and, as I said, the likes of washing
liquid. In one hit?
Yeah, in one hit. They came in. Now, unfortunately, our team were possibly not as alert as they should have been. It happened in the evening time. They came in. They were parked outside. There were three of them. They literally lifted everything and put it, you know, into bags and down clothes, etc. Made their way out the door, out into the car, and they were gone. And, of course, the guard, he knew who they were. They called to them. But, you know, unfortunately, those products are gone as well.
Okay. And is that out of necessity or criminality?
That particular one would be out of criminality.
But no, they're both criminal acts, but I think you know the difference I'm making.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's not somebody who's in addiction. That's somebody who's opportunist. You know, like opportunity happens all the time. I was telling somebody the other day, I had to get a new microwave for the canteen in Patrick Street, and I pulled up at the bus stop illegally, I would add, for 2 seconds, jumped out, ran to the front of the shop, put the box with the new microwave onto a fixture right inside the door, ran back, jumped in my car, went off, parked my car, right back at the store 10 minutes later, and I said, "Where's that microwave gone?" And they were like, "What are you talking about?" When we looked at the cameras, there was a woman passing the front door, and she said, "I'll take that." And she got herself a lovely new microwave from Hurley Heath Central, Patrick Street.
Really? They are really opportunistic, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah, you said it. Yeah.
But then don't you see the ones, if it's, say, for instance, butter or steak or chicken or washing tablets for the washing machine or the dishwasher, are there people that just are so poor that they're driven to having to do that?
Look, there's a lot of opportunists going on. I've heard stories from different people that a lot of the meat that's being stolen in not our stores now, but in the multiples, that they're stealing the meat and they're then selling the meat on to, you know, possibly takeaways, possibly private people, you know, calling to houses, etc. You know, a lot of people know those stories who your listeners today, I'm sure, would know about them. So that would be, as I said, that would be the opportunist side of things. And then you've got the misfortunates who are in addiction that are stealing alcohol or whatever else.
You don't have self checkouts, do you? I hear that that's a real vulnerable area for retailers because people can literally just maybe not scan everything or just walk through the self checkout and keep on going. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we don't have them in our stores in the city centre, Neil, but we do have them in Mallow, and where I am at the moment, actually, and we do have them in Bishopstown. It's not a massive problem. I wouldn't think it's huge, but it is. Yeah, it's there 100%. But, I mean, my local supermarket where I might go sometimes in the evening on the way home, you know, they sell checkouts there, and I use them all the time. I actually think they're great to get you through faster, and, you know. But, that is another element of it.
But you will always prosecute, will you?
Well, the guards prosecute our company procedures that everything, be it a Mars bar or a penny sweet, if it's stolen, we call it into the guards. And to be fair, Superintendent John Deasy has said it to me personally. He said, when you have an incident, call it in. The guards come, they take the CCTV and they take a report. And, you know, sometimes it's followed up and prosecuted. So other times, you know, it might, if it's a juvenile situation, it could be different again, you know. Okay.
But let's say that it is followed up at and results in a court appearance. Do you ever get any feedback as to what happened with that individual? Because some of the times they'd have had multiple offences behind them.
Absolutely. Look, we had a break-in in the store, in one of the stores last summer, and the guy, he managed to get in and he literally wanted alcohol. That was at 5 o'clock in the morning, caused untold damage to the front store area of the store between the shutter and the door. He got in, you know, he managed to get away with whatever, 50, 60 euros worth of beer and vodka. And when he was picked up, I had to go to the court that day, and he had 288 previous convictions. And he's on the paper, if your listeners want to Google that. Yeah. It's true, you know.
So 288. Did he get time for it, or do you know?
I don't know. I think that case is pending, Neil. I'm not sure, to be honest.
So are we heading then finally to a time when everything will be behind locked cabinets? You go overseas now and you see a lot of more shops, but all pharmacies, for instance, as an example, in New York, everything is behind locked cabinets. You have to push buttons and staff members open the cabinets for you. Is that where we're heading?
It's being trialled in some Super Value stores up in Dublin in relation to that, from an alcohol perspective.
Yeah.
I really hope that we don't go down that road. I love retail, I love our business, and I love dealing with customers and you know, dealing with suppliers and all of that kind of stuff. So I really hope that we don't go down the road of having that lock and key type thing of the guy coming in and having to ask, can I... You know, obviously they have to ask for cigarettes at the moment, and they have to ask for what we call hard liquor, like, you know, vodka, etc. It's all behind the tills and vapes, etc. But, you know, if a guy was coming in for a bar of chocolate and he'd ask for a button, then it wouldn't be a world I'd like to live in, to be honest.
It'd be quite impersonal, wouldn't it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nice one. Thanks so much, Kevin. Appreciate you taking the call this morning.
Nice,
Kevin Hurley here with like six different centres at least. And it's interesting, he makes the point also that the Garda presence in the city is making a huge difference, and that's great news. But your thoughts, please, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Hold on, Emma, I'm going to get to you after the break.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Text 0868 104 106. Emma, good morning. Can you hear me all right?
Hello.
There you are. Is this line okay for you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Okay, okay. How many parking fines do you think you've got
in the last 4 years?
Yeah. Have you ever put a figure on it?
I would say close to 20 each year.
20 a year?
Yeah, each two semesters.
Okay. How much is a parking fine?
€40.
Okay, so that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Every single year. And why is why does it keep happening, and where does it keep happening? I mean, I know you're a student midwife in the CUMH, so is that a good place to start? Where are you parking?
Well, for work in the hospital, I park in Curraheen at the Park and Ride.
Yeah.
So that's fine. It's funny, though, because I have to drive past the hospital to come back on it in a bus. which is quite funny, but for college, there's just no parking at all. They have one Park and Ride, but it fills up before around 8 a.m. So if that's full, you're street parking. And then the street parking runs out every 2 hours. So if you're stuck in a situation that you're in a lecture or a lab or an exam, you're not going to be able to go onto your phone and top up the 250 every 2 hours.
Yeah. Where would you be parking for that to happen?
Anywhere around UCC, Magazine Road, Bandon Road, Glasheen Road, they all have the street parking.
And where do you live?
I live on Bandon Road.
So are you entitled to a parking permit?
Yes, but the only issue with the parking permit is you would have to...
Go ahead, you're grand.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. You have to, with the parking permit, you have to change like your logbook on your car. So if you go home for the summer and any post for your car would be sent to your college address then. So every second semester you would have to redo your car's logbook to prove that your address was in Cork instead of elsewhere.
And if you didn't, what would happen?
Well, then you might lose posts. Someone else might get your post for a while. And I don't think many people stay in the same accommodation year after year.
Well, that could be true too. You'd be changing forever. But okay. All right. That's unfortunate, because that would be a get out of jail card if you had a parking permit. But because you yesterday, I think it was on Instagram, wasn't it? You're just fed up of this. This could be 800 to a grand a year just in fines alone to go into the CUMH. You're a student midwife to work for. Do you get paid as a student?
We get paid in final year, so I'm finally paid now, but for the last 3 years I wasn't.
So where were you finding the money?
I mean, I work the weekends But historically I did, or else my parents would just have to cough up the money.
Yeah. See, the problem now is they've taken away so much of the parking spaces. Isn't that one of the issues?
Yeah. No, that's the serious problem, because so many students aren't from Cork that are going to college in UCC are travelling up and living in the student accommodation around UCC, and there's literally no parking for them.
Right, yeah.
So they all street park or use the park and rides. And then if they use the park and rides, the people from Cork commuting in don't have anywhere to park either.
Yeah, because I know we have like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds every day, including your good self, from the CUH parking out where we are here in the, you know, university business park here, and they're shuttled in and out with buses. What happened to all of the parking spaces that were in the CUH and the CUMH? Who got all of those? Is that for patients and their families?
Yeah, I think a lot of them are patients, and then obviously just the over expansion of the hospital constantly due to more sick patients every year. I don't know.
Yeah. What would make it right? How would things improve if you could have a magic wand?
If I had a magic wand, I would think that the council should either improve the app so that you could pay for long term, like say 9 a.m. to 5 p.m, pay it in one go instead of the little intervals throughout the day. Or I would tell them to make Magazine Road, Vanden Road, Glasheen Road all free parking for students because of the high population of students.
How would you do that?
I don't know, I'd have to get in contact with someone high up somewhere.
Free parking for students? Would they get a special sticker for their windscreen or something?
No, they just have a certain area that was free. Like every other college in Ireland has parking for students that's free. So,
do they really? On streets?
Well, see, other colleges wouldn't be on streets.
Yeah.
Like UL or UCD.
A campaign then, right, on Leaside for free parking for students and see how that works out. Students would love you, but I'm not sure other motorists would.
Yeah, I don't know how that would go.
I think the idea is that you park up for 2 hours, and after the 2 hours, you're supposed to move your car. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I understand. Yeah. I feel your pain, like, because, you know, money is tight. How much would you be spending anyway on parking, you know, topping up constantly?
Well, if I was being totally honest with you, due to how often the council people go up and do the tickets, it's actually cheaper to not pay for parking and just pay the odd fine.
Go away.
Because if you don't, you're paying €40 a week anyways, but you could get a week where you don't get a ticket.
Wow. It's better to take a gamble.
Yeah. And then obviously I had a bad gamble and got 5 in a row, so.
Over what space did you get those 5?
2 weeks.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was a bad gamble.
Yeah, that one didn't pay off. Hold on there if you want, just for 1 second. Malcolm, good morning.
Hi, Neil.
Pick up on this. I'm feeling Emma's pain. She's suggesting that students on Leaside should be given free parking on the streets.
Well, I don't know how I'm going to answer this now, because my daughter is going to UCC for a good number of years. She's after going to UCC for more than the professors up there, I think. But the long and the short of it is, and she also, her now husband, lived in Sunday as well. So when she was up there, she used to park her in and around that area continuously.
Yeah.
So she'd come home every evening and she would be spitting fire. I can't use the word she used. But my daughter got married just over a year ago.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine eventually became a traffic warden.
Did he become an ex-friend then, did he?
Yeah. Well, look, all I could see, it was like a red, a bull to a red flag every time she saw him. But at the wedding, I used it in my speech. I just turned around and said, before you lynch him, such and such a person's at the wedding, get to know him, buy him a pint, and give him your registration number. And you might get free parking in the future.
So did your daughter, like poor old Emma, did your daughter run up a lot of fines?
Do you know the scrapbooks that you use for holding photographs?
Yeah.
My daughter has one of those.
Full of unpaid parking fines?
No, they were paid. They were paid.
Who paid
she
them?
Had to pay them? She paid them all, says.
Oh,
my. Stupid enough to be doing the same thing. But this went down for a couple of years.
Emma, you're not alone, girl. You're not alone. Appreciate you taking the call. Take care of yourself. Text 0868104106 as to whether Emma's idea will fly or not. I don't know. Have a listen to these texts, Emma, though. Ask her where would she like the residents and the people who have lived on the Bandon Road and surrounding areas and own their own houses to park, says Catherine. Yeah, like, bear in mind, we are talking about students here, and a lot of the time they are penniless. Well, I mean... I know exactly what people are going to say now from saying that. Oh, yeah, they're penniless, but they have plenty of money to buy drink up in College Road, keep us awake half the night. Obviously, can I come on air? I'm an actual warden. But please ask Neil to ask if any resident from around either of the colleges will come on to express their frustration, which wardens have to listen to every single day, at college students parking all over their own residential areas. Well, this is something that I touched on about 6 months ago, I think, with regards to the MTU and the parking in the housing estates around there. But where are students supposed to go? Where are they supposed to park? A lot of them are travelling long distances. If they can't park on the campus, what are they supposed to do? You should tell that girl to park in Haldane across from Red FM and go over and get the parking right there. Just a thought. There's an example, I suppose, of people then parking in residential areas. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Text 0868104106. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Text 0868104106. Why don't they have a counter like you go into in many hardware stores and you ask for what you want? Well, those are old school ways of doing things. Of course, you got aisles upon aisles now. I don't think you'd ever go back to that. How do they know the quantity and the price of the robbery? Why wouldn't they know? They know what the stock costs. The brand named butter and food and meats are being stolen from shops to order, says Tim, as in there is a saleable market for them all. It's not out of food poverty or necessity. Women in Carrigaline last week, they're always there around tea time. Their skirts are full. Even a small microwave was up one woman's skirt. How do you walk then with the microwave up your skirts like? I mean, it's almost like a circus trick, isn't it? Some individuals steal as a necessity, Neil. They may not be able to afford food themselves. It's for their kids or their families. Perhaps there would be some of that too. Now, talk about the sentence that your man got. He got 11 years and 2 suspended. John says, when you get 11 years with 2 suspended, that's down to 9. Then you get a third off for good behaviour, and then it's down to 6. All of a sudden, it's gone from 11 to 6 straight away. Text 0868104106. We'll pick it up after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
All right, well, if all the parents and kids are happy with World Book Day and dressing up tomorrow, go for it. If it's encouraging children to read books, it's got to be a good thing, right? Just a comment on World Book Day in relation to all of the killjoys. Leave it alone and let kids be kids. I travelled with children with additional needs and they were so excited this morning getting into the taxi all dressed up in their simple Spider-Man suits with their Spider-Man books. Commercialism and over-elaborate outfits should not come into it at all. It's excitement and it's engagement for children. Nice one, Neil. Great to see this morning driving up Toker and the Lock that the Irish flags are flying high again on the poles. Looks great. So they may well have been taken down by City Council, but they're back up again. My daughter's a nurse, parked in UCC every year while in college, but you need to get there by 7:30 a.m. Can you please confirm to me and tell me if it's true? Look into the €800 charge to bring Irish citizens home from Oman or on a government chartered flight. Is it true? Yes, it is true. I was talking about it earlier on this morning. It's 100% true. They're saying that it's a discounted price and the children travel and fly for free. But for everybody else, it's €800 for the privilege. I saw an interesting one. So that's just to answer your question. As to whether people think it's a rip-off or whether they should be travelling for free, let me know. Text 0868104106. By and large, do bear in mind, a lot of people who will be coming back are tourists who are coming back from holidays, right? But one of those tourists actually got stuck in Dubai trying to get on a flight but having no luck. So they got in touch with the Clayton Hotel at Dublin Airport, because their car is there, and they were explaining we'd be late getting back. And this is a piece from Social this morning. I would have presumed that any extra cost would be waived considering the situation, but no, they want to charge me for every extra day the car is parked in the hotel. It's a war, people. A show of goodwill would be nice, believing that the airport hotel should waive the parking fees for the car that's there longer than expected. We did a lot yesterday on cars, not necessarily motor cars, but electric cars and hybrids. There was a huge response to that. Everybody really is very much engaged when it comes to EVs and hybrids and petrol and diesel. But of course, you're never too far from people letting me know about the price of petrol in their own area. So thank you for that. And the how rapidly the prices increased at the pumps. There's a story that makes the Mirror this morning saying that in the not too distant future, and they give examples of it, you will see diesel, if it's a baseline recently of €1.73, it will go to €2.02. That's what you can expect fairly soon. And petrol prices are also expected to increase from, say, the baseline that we were used to for a period of time, €1.72. That will go to €2.06 per litre. Or in a worst case scenario, I have no idea what that is, if it goes on for months and months and months, petrol could go as high as €2.53 a litre. That's something to look forward to. So, okay, so that's measuring fluids and what have you in the case of petrol and diesel per litre. I can segue nicely on then to, say, for instance, alcohol. And it's been interesting, actually, the last few weeks, because I'm talking a lot either on air or to people in the old social circles who have decided to give alcohol a break. For some, they decided just after Christmas. But by and large, it happens a lot during Lent. And of course, Viv is absolutely flying. And we spoke to her on the air a couple of times as to how she's getting on for the last few weeks, just taking a break from alcohol. To a large extent, for a lot of people, it's wine. But there's a lot more people also who've just decided to kick it and give up. And in Orla's case, I think it was last July. Orla, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. So we're looking at July of last year, are we?
Yeah, July of last year.
Was there any particular reason that you decided then? Where were you? What was the event or anything like that?
You know what? No, I think the older you get, I think women especially, I think when we have a few drinks, the next day I felt like I murdered someone and I buried the body. It was just the anxiousness and the fear. I think it's different when you get older. Do you know that kind of way?
The fear. The fear is different to appalling chronic hangovers. The fear is a mental state of mind, is it?
Yeah, it's just like, it's the fear. It's like when you wake up with a hangover and like, oh, did I say something? Did I do something? Not that I even drank that much, but it was just, I do think that like with women, perimenopause have a lot to do with it as well.
Okay.
Definitely. Because a lot of women that I talk to have gone off drink because of perimenopause and menopause.
Okay, so how does that impact on them?
Again, the fear, I just think you just can't handle it. There's so much going on in your body, in your head as it is, so then the drink doesn't help.
And is it a case that, you know, say before you could have drank more, but when, you know, as you get that old, a little bit older, it has a worse impact and it's you're drinking less to get that bad impact?
Definitely drinking less. Like years ago, I lived in America, everything, like parties, all that. But drink away, you could go into work, you could be out the night before and you can go into work at 7 o'clock and not a bother to you. No hangover, fine, no fear. And then, like last year, it was just, I wouldn't even drink that much. But if I, say, had 2 or 3 glasses of wine, I'd wake up the next morning, I'd feel like crap. And I was like, oh, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So last June or July, I think it was, Roy Keane was in the marquee.
Yeah.
And I remember I was on jury duty at the same time. So I was like, look, I'll just drive. I won't drink. I couldn't be hungover in jury duty.
Yeah.
So I ended up having 2 Corona Zeros and woke up the next day. I was like, oh my God, this is great. And then I think I had something on the week after. And I was like, do you know what? I won't bother to drink. I'll have a Corona Zero or a Heineken Zero. And I didn't kind of mean to go off it. Then I just started feeling better and it just happened from there. And I remember going on the holidays to Spain with my partner and my 2 kids. And I was thinking, oh my God, this is going to be so hard going on the holidays, sitting in the sun. We all think of cocktails and we're sitting in the sun.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, couldn't be bothered. I think I had, what's the local Spanish beer? They did 0.0 beers. Might add one or two of the zero beers, and I was like, it's gone. Got up the next morning, off on my walk, went to the gym. It's just different. I think I have more energy with the kids and stuff, and it's just different. Your head is more clearer,
yeah,
I think, anyway.
Yeah. So along that journey, you did have challenges in the sense that, you know, if you were going out socialising with friends or, oh my God, I'm going on holidays and I'd like to have a cocktail. Yeah. But you overcame all of those.
Oh, yeah, I thought it'd be worse. I did. I thought it'd be worse. Like, I went up with the girls at Christmas, we went for a meal, and they were having a few glasses of wine, and I was looking at the wine, and I was saying, I'd love that, but I'm a stubborn person.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah. I was like, no, it's grand. We made a great laugh, and got into the car, drove home, and waiting on taxis, and it's...
So most of the things, it's a huge sense of freedom as well. But, you know, so you're out with your friends, say, for instance, and they're all drinking wine. How do they react to you not drinking?
Oh, no, no one has ever batted an eyelid. Everyone's like, oh, my God, Sarah juiced you. And I think I have influenced a few people, because a few people have messaged me saying, I've done the same, I'm off the drink. But, no, my friends wouldn't bat an eyelid. My other half likes his few pints and doesn't bother him. And he thinks I'm better off without it, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. But because I do hear of people who are put under pressure. But if you go out, like if you were to go out one-on-one with a pal, just you and a girlfriend, as they say, and she wanted to have a few glasses of wine or a few cocktails, a couple of gin and tonics or whatever, and you say to her across the table, well, I'm not drinking tonight, it's like as if her world has ended.
I think years ago it was like that. I don't think anymore, because I think I'm seeing less and less people drinking. So I think years ago it was like, oh my God, you're not drinking. Are you pregnant? Do you want antibiotics?
Yeah, yeah.
But no, it's not. I think people are like, yeah, do what you have to do, be you. And I think when you get older, you don't care what other people think anyway, to be honest. But you don't.
That's the nice thing, isn't it?
You don't. Yeah, you don't. But I think people don't care as much anymore. Just be you, do you, just please yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So you know? when you look at it now, what is it, like 7 or 8 months at this stage now?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
have you more energy, more clarity?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Well, I'm into fitness anyway, so definitely. But I have 2 12-year-old girls and they're teenagers, as I call them. It's harder now than when they were babies. Even just for them, because they have matches. You're up on the Sunday morning at 8 o'clock for the soccer matches or their GAA matches, and they have dancing. They want to be dropped here, dropped there.
We've all kind of been on the sideline down through the years, let's be honest about it, hungover of a Saturday morning.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And allergic getting up with your kids, like, yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have any of that anymore, but
You would get up at 9 in the morning, you're like wishing that the matches are called off, that it rains.
Looking for the text to say it's off.
Yeah, yeah.
But have you been on the sideline observing others who are hungover and the horrors on the sidelines since you gave up?
Yeah, a few times. I've been to the pub and stuff, like the local pub, and I've made 0-0 Heineken. But I think you take so much more notice when you're not drinking. You know, if someone is after too many drinks, they're looking at them, you're saying, oh my God, I'm allergic to them. Do you know, kind of that way?
Or do you say, was I like that, is it?
Was I like that? You see how silly people can be with drinking them, or how louder they get and stuff.
But so you have the Irish goodbye then, where you just slip away.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can get into the car.
Sarah says, does life not become boring though? Having a few drinks is fun, she says.
Yeah. No, not a bit boring. You don't need drinks to be happy. You don't need alcohol to be happy. You don't need to take drugs to be happy. You don't. At the end of the day, I think drink is a curse, to be honest. Well,
do you?
If you can't handle it.
Have you heard of grey area drinking?
No.
It's the middle grey area, I hear, about moderate social drinking and severe alcohol use disorder. You know, the grey areas where you're drinking more than the recommended guidelines, but you're still maintaining the responsibilities of daily life. You can, you know, you might well be struggling a bit, but you can just about keep it together. You know, your grey area drinker would use alcohol to manage anxiety and things like that, you know, but they don't ever hit rock bottom. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But they're in that kind of grey zone, they describe it, or a routine of it.
Yeah, I think some people just adapt to it. They probably get used to it as their routine. Friday night, I left a few glasses of wine. Tough week in work. Then Saturday night, it's the weekend. But it's each to their own. But this is how I feel. And I know there is a lot of women, I'm 40, nearly 47, giving away my age.
Yeah.
there's a lot of women out there that feel the same as me. I think they have given up the drinking, or they've even cut down and stuff like that. But look, if you can handle it, it's fine. But each to their own. If you don't want to drink, you don't have to drink. Don't please people. If people say, oh, do you want to go for a drink tonight? And I think people have the fear sometimes of saying to other people, oh, I don't want to drink. They're afraid in case what they think. Do you know?
Yeah. And do you think you've encouraged others then as a consequence in the recent months?
I have, yeah, because I work in the gym as well. So a few of the women in the gym said, oh, I'm off the drink and you influenced me and I feel so much better. I was out last night with the girls. I had 0.0 Heineken and I have influenced people, and, you know. So it's,
but how's the wedding going to play out, though, next summer?
Oh, my God, I get married. I don't know.
I just had to remind you of that, did I?
Oh, my God, how do you remind me of that? I should be drinking coming up to the wedding. We're going to Spain to get married. You know that, Norca?
Yeah.
So
that's where Emma got married. Yeah, Norca. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah. So I don't know. I might have a glass of champagne. I might have non-alcoholic.
You might, or you mightn't. But what about the hen?
We're going to Killarney for the hen that I know of. I don't know. It doesn't bother me. I could still go out, dance, and enjoy.
Yeah.
I just don't need drink to be happy or to be merry.
Yeah, but
I think
absolutely.
It is an Irish way to be.
Yeah, no, you don't. But I get the impression as well as just you're happy where you are now. It may change in the future, who knows? But where you are at now is a good place.
Yeah, I'm happy out. Yeah, even my kids, I have 12-year-old twin girls, and like I could sit down with a zero beer or whatever. On a Friday night, I might get a Corona Zero, and they're like, "Mom, I'm so proud of you."
I love it.
Yeah,
well said.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
I never drink, Mom. I'm like, well, I hope you don't. But it is. I just feel different. You're more clearer. And I think Viv probably feels the same. She's, what, 3-4 weeks in?
She's jumping out of the bed 2 hours earlier. Not a bother. She's up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning. Ferrying people all over. She's thinking of taking up Uber driving and all sorts of things. Can't burn the energy fast enough. I love the fact that you've influenced your children like that, where they say they're proud of you. That's a wonderful thing, isn't it, Orla?
Yeah, it is. At the end of the day, you're working for your kids and you want them to mimic everything you do.
Good luck to you. Good luck to you. Mind yourself. Congratulations.
Thanks a million, Neil. Thanks a million.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Text 0868-104-106. Neil, you can tell the hungover ones at GAA and soccer matches. They have the sunglasses on, even in the winter. They're sitting in the car watching through the windscreen because they can't get out and have the chats with other parents because of the fear. Text 0868-104-106.
Get on to Prendeville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I'll come back to emails and texts in a second. I'm just keen to talk to Leo because I did get some correspondence in from Ken who said that these are the kind of charges people are being hit with if you're on holidays. Take, for example, trying to get back from Singapore and you want to get back to Ireland because of everything that's going on. We're being totally screwed. And he sent me some examples then of four stops. And between all of the different flights to get, say, Singapore, ultimately to Cork, it would take 38 hours and 50 minutes at a cost of €2,491 just for a one-way flight. Now, you could say that about Singapore. You could say it for other places that are far afield, say, for instance, Australia and things like that. So, Leo, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing, Neil?
Appreciate you jumping on. Tell me about your brother.
So, my brother and his wife went out to Sydney to see their daughter. They're out there 3 weeks now, and they were staying for 6 weeks. So their daughter and the granddaughter decided she'd go with them, but she was going for 3 weeks. So she was meant to fly back on Monday. And obviously with all this thing kicking off on Saturday, there was a big panic, and the flights were... Her flights were cancelled.
Right. So not redirected via South Africa or anything, just cancelled.
Just cancelled completely because they flew through Dubai with Emirates.
Yeah.
So obviously everything that was coming into into Dublin as well was stopped from Emirates.
Yeah.
They rang me panicking. I had connections in the American Embassy and to ring to see if I could do anything through the States. So I said, look, they won't be able to do anything because all they're doing is they're meant to be getting their own home. They're saying they're getting them home, but they're actually not. So I checked out through LAX to come back.
Los Angeles.
LAX was Los Angeles. So that was €2,000 from Sydney to Los Angeles, and then whatever it was going to cost him from Los Angeles to Dublin.
Los Angeles to Dublin could well be a grand or
1,500. You'd be talking another 1,500. And I'm talking about 2,000 each. So, and that was, this was my niece and her four-year-old daughter.
That's $7,000 for the two of them all day long.
Seven grand, yeah. So I got on to my son who's in Australia, and mates of his came back. They moved back to Cove and whatever. So he said, try, ask him to go to Texas and places like that, because they're different types of airport. They're not big hub airports. And that's what they done. When they were coming back, they came back through Texas, and it was cheaper. Or go to Kuala Lumpur, because they avoid the Middle East. So
you're shopping around, really, if you like.
So when Turkey was hit, then my sister and I panicked. I said, we're not going to get out of here, because I said to them, just stay your extra 3 weeks and see what happens. So they contacted, my niece was in contact, and in fairness, she was in contact with the airline the whole time. And with, now, Neil, I'm not sure if this is every airline, but Air Emirates got onto them and said, yeah.
Sorry, losing you a bit there, Leo. Emirates said what? All right, that's unfortunate, because there is a conclusion to it. Are you still there? No, okay. I won't spoil the show, because I'll let him finish the conversation himself. Be interested. Like, if you look at some of the prices that I mentioned, 2,491 being a typical one, where you come back, say, for instance, there could be an Australian flight if you could get it, or in this case, it was a Singapore flight, doesn't make the 800 that the government is charging per adult quite a cheap deal, or are some people suggesting that everybody who is stuck overseas should be flown back free of charge? Maybe that could be a really wonderful gesture for Irish people abroad, to actually bring them home for free. But anyway, text 0868104106. As soon as I clean up, Leo, we'll finish that story. But Tony, good morning. Tony.
Okay. Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good. No, we have issues this morning. Apologies for it. So jump in there, because we're talking about petrol and diesel and home heating oil. What have you got for me?
I'm a haulage contractor here in Cork, and the price of the fuel, when the fuel goes up, everything goes up. As simple as, right? Everything from the bowl of cornflakes to the boiler that you're writing with, everything is carried in a truck, so it has to go up.
True.
Right? So if fuel goes up 20 cents a litre, we're going to have to try and pass that on to the customer unless we get some sort of a subsidy from the government.
Yeah.
The transport industry, the government takes over 30%. Of our turnover is government imposed taxes.
So it's going to impact. It's going to impact on the shelves then, for sure.
It's going to impact on the shelves. Like, I've talked there with a cash and carry company, right? And when I pass this on to them, I don't have a choice when I pass it on. I can carry it. If I pass that on to them, how are they going to cover it? They're going to put it on the.
The cash and carry will pass it on to the supermarket. The supermarket will pass it on to the.
Absolutely.
Customer.
Now, the thing about it is, right, we're running trucks there, and we're also hit with the carbon tax. We're hit with carbon tax. It's actually double and quadruple taxation imposed on the haulage industry by the government.
Yeah, well, about 1/30 of it is all sorts of taxes, and the other 60 or 65 cent or whatever then is the actual cost of petrol. Yeah.
But if we can get back there, if we can get back to the carbon tax side of it, right, we in the haulage industry, we're running Euro 6 trucks now, which means we have to use AdBlue to eliminate carbon, right? We are paying 35, 40 cents a litre for AdBlue. That's money that we are putting into the industry again, right, to alleviate carbon. And we are still being charged a carbon tax by the government. We are doing lots of things. Our maintenance has gone up threefold, because you've all these sensors now for sensing the emissions to make sure that the...
I get it. No, listen, I don't dispute a single thing you're saying there, because...
The bottom line of it, what the members of the public need to realise here is, when the box of cornflakes goes up in price, or the bottle of milk goes up in price, it's all down to transport. and it's all down to the price of diesel.
I have to say, as a consumer myself, I really do believe that there's a lot of opportunism going on as well in supermarkets and the big multiples. I think they are trying it on a lot of the time. I don't really believe that all of these huge increases of the last 6 or 8 months are justified. And I don't see it being justified at all now with regards to the price increases in petrol and diesel. I think it's opportunism again at work.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. Like, I mean, we are paying an order levy of, I think, it's 2 cents a litre to store fuel in the country. So, like, how come the other night it went up? I think it was 8 cents. Mine went up the other night. You know, when this war happened, mine went up 8 cents. So, like, how come? Like, we have the reserve. So, how come that it's impacting on us straight away? So, like.
In the short term, diesel will probably go to €2, 2 litres. And if it goes on for longer than that, it could go to 2.40, 2.44. Petrol in the short term is expected to go up to €2.06. And if it continues, a worst case scenario, it could go as high as €2.53. But tell me about Tenerife.
Hello?
Yeah, okay. So bear with me with the phone lines. Were you in Tenerife recently?
No, I was not.
Okay, all right. So it's another Tony of the same name. Check this one out. He says, I was in Tenerife last week. Self-service garage, liter of diesel, and some days they'd have a flash sale. €1 for a liter of diesel. Some days they'd have a flash sale and they drop it to 96 cent.
There you go. That's the work from PT again.
What's going on, like? I mean,
I don't know.
Is it because maybe Tenerife's an island and it's subsidised by the Spanish or what?
Must be. There must be some sort of subsidy there because I don't think it can be bought. Like, across Europe, it's all more or less the same. But like when you, as I said, like there was no need for the increase that we got there in the last couple of days because Ireland has the reserve.
I hear you. And listen, as a haulier, you're warning the public if you are going to see more spikes in prices in supermarkets and groceries.
I am part of the Irish Road Haulage Association as well, and you've seen our president there, Joe Hyland, on there.
Yeah.
I just asked members of the public, listen to what Joe has to say. Joe has facts. And things are going to get expensive. We don't want stuff to get expensive. We're doing the best we possibly can with the government to see can we get some farm.
Well, your margin would be gone if you left things alone. I know what you're saying. I get it. I understand.
You know what I mean? Like, there's some operators out there that are working on a 2-3%. The bigger operators are working on a 2 or 3% margin at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah, so like, I gotcha. Okay.
And if you look at it, there has been more businesses went under, and a lot of it is down to fuel.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, well, it's that. I mean, it's just a hammering of costs hidden in other ways.
You see, Fastway there a number of weeks that was detrimental. I guarantee a lot of that was down to fuel, the cost of fuel.
Yeah.
You know, so look, members of the public need to realize.
Dolores.
All right. Okay. Appreciate it. I get it. Thank you, Tony. Let me get back to Leo. I've switched him over to WhatsApp. So what ultimately happened then? Did they go Sydney, Texas or what?
They're going Sydney to Los Angeles and Los Angeles to Dublin, an 8-hour layover in Los Angeles.
Right.
But it's all free. It's all covered by the airline.
Well, it's covered by the airline because they were their original.
They were their original airline. Even though they're not due to come back for 3 weeks, the airline, when they got onto the airline, said, "Yeah, you're after paying us, and it's our duty of care to get you home."
Yeah, and I suppose, and are you saying it's generous of them, or I think they're obliged to do that.
No, they're obliged to do it. Look, Neil, there's. My wife and myself, we were going on a cruise during Katrina and the hurricane back in 2005, and they were using every excuse back then, it's an act of God.
Yeah, force majeure.
And they're saying now it's not their fault. The insurance companies are saying it's not their fault, they don't have to honour it. But when an airline goes on strike, that's not their fault. When there's a flight delayed, it's not their fault. That's what you pay insurance for.
Yeah, but hang on a second now, an act of war would be covered, right?
Oh, yeah, it should be, but some insurance companies are saying it's not their fault and they don't have to cover it.
Well, I'm glad it worked out for them because it's a nightmare for people who are trying to get home. Just finally, do you think that the cost of flights are going to go up as well, you know, as in aviation fuel?
Yeah. Oh, they have no choice. They have no choice because as soon as like this keeps going the way it's going, most fuels come from crude and it has to be broken down and whatever. This is definitely everything belongs to airlines is going to go up in price.
Okay. Thanks for that.
Same for us all. The only reason I sent it in, Neil, if there is anyone out there, just to get onto the airline and say, look, when can you get us home? You know, because they have to get you home. But and I know nobody wants to say, I was in the military for years. No one wants to stay in a war-torn country when this is happening.
No, I know.
But unfortunately, just to stay safe and if you can get a flight.
But are you saying put your foot down? Because somebody says here, my brother is doing the same flight. Perth, Sydney, Los Angeles, Dublin. 2,060 euro for each of them. There's three of them. It's over $6,000. And Emirates are not giving it to them for free.
Well, my brother won't leave a room with a light on. So I can tell you now, he won't pay. He was willing to pay it and try and fight it when he comes home. You know what I mean? So I can tell you now, is definitely... Because I said to him, I asked him yesterday how much, because they were actually due to go on holidays again in May when he retires, and they've actually cancelled that. So I said to him, what is it going to cost you coming home? I literally only off the phone before I called you, and he said, nothing, absolutely nothing. I actually have his car here, I'm driving up to Dublin on
Well, fair
Saturday morning
to pick
him up.
Fair play to him. He's resilient and he stood his ground.
So,
all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now, in fairness, if it's his daughter, obviously the younger people know it, be fair. But if it's Emirates Airlines, if anyone should just say, look, we paid to go home with you. You have to honour it.
Okay.
Or are you going to give us the money back?
Okay. Well, that's interesting for people who might have friends or families overseas. They might want to pass that on if you stand your ground.
All right. Now, the other thing as well is, which I told him he thought by going to Australia, his credit card insurance might cover him. And I said to him, surely to God you bought travel insurance going over. And he said, no, sir. He said, we have it through our visa card. I said, that won't cover delays or whatever.
Yeah.
And they still got back.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Leo. Interesting. Thank you, Leo. Interestingly, a multi-trip travel insurance policy. They do vary somewhat in price, but you wouldn't pay much more than maybe 100, 110, 120 euro a year, I would think, for a multi-trip policy that will cover all sorts of things. If you have that kind of money to spare and you travel a lot, then it is a super investment. It's a bit like that other one, the caraccess.com kind of thing that you can get. I think it's about 70 euro a year. Covers all of the excesses that they might be trying on for your rental cars as we head across the summer. They cover all of any of those potential extras. And that's a cheap annual as well. Something around 70, 75, 80 euro a year for an excess policy. Anyway, text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
It's mad busy, so I'll pick up on texts and emails after 11. But I know that Aaron has taken an early lunch, so he can chat with me this morning, and I appreciate it. Aaron, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you, bud?
I'm good, man. I'm good. So you and your wife and your two-year-old are packing up, leaving Ireland in May and heading to Sardinia. You've requested a work transfer. Is that right?
That's the one, yeah.
Why?
Just the price of everything, Neil. We're paying nearly up to the bones of 2,000 euro a month for rent. And we have creche, which is 800, the government paid a 2 euro per hour thing, so it drops it down to about 550. So we just can't save up for a mortgage, basically. It's just too expensive. And I'm 35 now. My wife is a bit younger than me, but Jesus, by the time we got a deposit saved up and going, we could be 40. And we've been maybe 400, 500,000 with the price of the houses.
Without a doubt, a three-bedroom semi all day long, if not already, but certainly then. And do you mind me asking, have you attempted to try and put some savings away weekly or monthly?
We are saving as much as we possibly can. We have a bit, but nowhere near what we would need. I could afford a mortgage. If I had a deposit, Jesus, like, I could get it's a house straight away, like, yeah. You know? It's a deposit. Like, it's such a setback, like.
If you can pay $2,000 a month in rent, you can afford a mortgage. But yet the government 100%. Will not put in place a government-backed mortgage scheme for Irish citizens.
No, there's nothing. And we can't get anything off Cork City Council. Cork City Council told me that you actually earn too much, so you won't get any help off us. So I was talking to Tommy Gould there a few months ago, and he was like, Jesus, you're in the worst position. You're stuck in the middle. He said the banks won't give you a mortgage because you don't earn enough. And you can't get the deposit up, and Cork City Council will give you nothing because they're saying you earn too much. So you're caught in the middle.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, what about Help to Buy? No? Nothing like that?
No, apparently not. Well, oh yeah, the Help to Buy, yeah, geez, but that'd be, it's the same kind of rate.
Same as a mortgage, like.
Yeah. And it's just, it's such a letdown, like, even in terms of, like, getting the HAP, like, the landlords I have, no lease. No contract, nothing. Won't take the HAP. So you just have.
Won't take HAP. Won't give you a lease. Do you pay cash?
Cash. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's all sorts of red flags and alarms going off there.
Yeah, but sure. What can you do? Like, if you're like, where else are you going to go? Where are you going to find accommodation? Like, if you want to go into Daft and you look at any place.
But the law dictates that, firstly, that HAP should not be refused. Secondly, that you shouldn't be given cash. Thirdly, that you should have a lease. Fourthly, that it should be registered, or he should be registered with the RTB. Also returning rent for tax.
Yeah, I know. But you know, if you have a family at home and you've got a nice little house and you have a roof over your head, are you going to be...
You're not.
Putting up, do you know?
You're not. You're going to keep your head down and stay quiet. So there are obviously people who are just like that landlord and trousering $2,000 net per month.
Yeah.
How better will it be? I know your wife's from Sardinia, but how better will it be in Sardinia? Beautiful places, you well know, but what will life be like?
As a Cork man now, I couldn't tell you, Neil. You know, I'd miss the people. I think there'd be a better quality of life, for sure, like, in terms of, you know, we won't be looking at these grey skies and raining for 3 months straight, but we've family over there, which would be a massive, massive help. The company I work for are over there, like, so I can put in a transfer request and give it a go, Neil. Give it a go. I mean, I could stay here for another 10 years doing exactly what we're doing and be miserable and be stuck. Enough to make any life ahead of us. Or
how does that make you feel? Bitter?
Not bitter, like, just disappointed, like, but it's, you know, like, it's not the first, like, I was disappointed, I suppose, in terms of, like, I don't think anyone deserves, it would be a wrong word, I deserve it, you know, but, like, I was let down by the state as a child, you know, being in through foster homes and long-term
homes. So many, 14 foster homes.
14, yeah, before the age of 8, like, so I was highly traumatised, and I got into drug addiction at 14, and I was out on the streets then, from just before my 18th birthday, for about 6 years, and I was in through Cork Simon and Vincent's and all that, and I got clean, and I went away, and I did my equivalent for my leave and start, and I went to university, and I got a degree, and I've stayed clean, I'm 12, 13 years at it, but I went back and I worked in these places that I once lived in, you know, and I turned it around. And funny enough, what I was mentioned about Cork City Council, like, I was on that list, but because I didn't have a fixed address when they had written out years ago to, if you don't respond to this, you'd lose your place kind of a thing. And when I went back in with the HAP, they were like, no, you've lost it. I said, what do you mean I lost it? Sure, like, so anyway, you could put in an appeal, and by the time the appeal came back, where you can get your years of credit back to you, they said, no, you're earning too much. So, like, for me to get a house, I've two options. One, I can save away for the next 8 to 10 years and be in debt of 400,000, whatever the price of a house would be in maybe five to 10 years. Or I could quit my job, which is a good job that I have, and a good position that I've attained within the company. I could get a job in maybe McDonald's, which is also a good job, but it would pay less. My wife could maybe work part-time, and then maybe in about three, four years, I could get a council house, which is madness, like. And, like, I just feel...
It's interesting you put it like that. I understand.
Yeah, bitter wouldn't be the word, but just kind of like, I'm not the only fella out there, Neil. Do you know what I mean? I'm not the only fella like with a family out there.
We're driving our youth and we're driving the people of tomorrow away from the country, and it's just appallingly sad. And it's understandable that like people are angry about it. But like, I mean, if you look at it, from 17 to 23, homeless, relying on night shelters and Simon and Vincent's and things, that must have been awfully hard.
Yeah, do you know what? It was.
You must have felt all alone in the world, did you?
Well, look, that's what a drug addiction does, do you know? That's just the way it landed for me. Look, I'd had all upbringing, I suppose, and that kind of warped my mind. And
you'd no kind of solid grounding at all. I don't even with 14 foster homes.
I had one that saved me.
Yeah, I was going to say that of all of the 14. I mean,
it saved me. That I'd still be in contact with to this day. They're a lovely family, but they were kind of the ones who kind of had stuck by me. But I suppose through my own kind of consequences of getting involved with addiction and stuff, that kind of broke down for a wee bit. But
yeah, no, and it's understandable. It would, like, you were going through the horrors. It's understandable. You know what I mean? If you're homeless and you have nowhere to lay your head at night and you have no stability in your life, is it any wonder that some people turn and develop problems with drink or drug? I don't know, it could have been tablets, it could have been pharma, it could be alcohol, it can be cocaine, it can be heroin, it can be anything.
Yeah, anything that will keep the head quiet, I suppose. Yeah. Too much of experience in your younger years.
100%.
The whole thing, like, you know, a lot of people think addiction is just some fella can't put the bottle down or he can't give up this. People are traumatized, you know, from their experiences, and, you know, you just get caught up in these cycles, and it is a very hard one to break now. Thank God.
Yeah. The state didn't do right by you as a child, isn't doing right by you now as a father and a husband.
No. Sure. It's like, what's the point, like, you know? What is the point in this country? And I just can't believe how fellas still vote in that same bloody government every year. It's the same stuff. Like, they do absolutely nothing. Like, nothing. It was yes, you're right about the prices of petrol and diesel and stuff like that, and all the tax that we pay and everything. Yeah. And I was just like, Jesus, like, you know. And then to hear Michal saying, oh, no, he won't be changing anything, like, you know. So these fellas couldn't give a hoot, like.
No, I can 100% understand. And actually, I'm a huge advocate of people travelling at some stage in their life. The earlier, the better, to get world experiences if they choose to come back. But I'm also of the opinion that, you know, the way we are right now, the recommendation to young people should be, don't get stuck in a rut here, you know. Don't, like, you know, it's not as if it's going to get better anytime soon. If there are better opportunities, unfortunately, parents won't like to say, to hear this, go, just go. You know, if it doesn't work out, you can come back. But, you know, don't stay and endure. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I love Cork. My wife loves Cork. She loves Ireland. She thinks it's beautiful, except for the weather, she says. But understandable. But it's not a thing where we, like, if we had a house here, maybe we wouldn't go, you know, because the money here is good and the jobs here.
But it's the cost of everything.
The cost of everything, like, it just doesn't make sense, like, you know. And then it's all for what, like, just to have a roof over the head. Like, do you want to be in debt of $500,000, like, or, you know? So
in fairness,
over there, like,
yeah,
you get a house over there, like, we're going renting over there, but it's €500 a month for the average kind of spot over there. Creches,
bonkers.
€250 a month. No, your wage is a bit different, but you can get a good working wage over there, like, you know. But nearly finished work, you don't have to be stuck inside. I mean, there's good weather. Like,
there's a lot to be said for the weather, isn't there? Yeah.
A lot to be said for it, but
yeah. So come May, you're gone.
Come May, I'm going, yeah. Like, I was... We're looking at movers, you know. But we're getting some expensive kind of quotes. The only thing we wanted to say was we wanted to bring over stuff that we've accumulated here, like, so we'd have kind of the best foot forward going over. I was hoping that maybe someone in Cork or people might know fellas who do moves over on trucks or something. So we're getting quotes of 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, like, but...
This might sound mad now, right? But there's no way in the wide earthly world you could do a self-drive, no?
We thought about it, but it's just with the baby and stuff, like, it'd just be a nightmare.
I know, a two-year-old. Yeah. I mean, it would be an adventure of a road trip, but... It probably not practical. Yeah. You'd never know who might be listening might be able to give us advice as to how you could do it affordably. But 500 a month for rent, 200 for crash fees, the weather better off. I mean, you have a degree in psychology. This is a guy who seriously turned his life around. At 23, he got the help that he needed. Went to Tabor Lodge, I believe. Wasn't that the case? Studied, went to college, got a degree in psychology. You've set yourself up for life in many ways.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, all we can do is say it's sad. You and others like you, but at the same time, wish you well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll give you a shout out when I'm over there.
And do, you just took the words out of my mouth. Do stay in touch on the next chapter of your life, Aaron.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but look, it is well, it is, my friend.
It is, like, indeed.
My tuppence work life.
Appreciate it. Okay. Stay in touch. If we hear of anybody with regards to movers and shifters and what have you, we'll be back to you at a reasonable price, okay?
Yeah. That'd be the job, mate.
Okay, Aaron, stay in touch.
Yeah. You too, bye. Take care.
Take care. Thanks for coming on air. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. That's just one example. We all know there are many other stories of young people just like that leaving our shores.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. We were talking about shoplifting, thievery and stealing earlier on this morning. A woman in Supervalue Bantry a few years ago, a small frozen chicken in her hat. She fainted at the till and was caught. It's a true story. My husband, my cousin worked in the shop at the time. Put a small frozen chicken under her hat. Ah, man, the world we live in. You know, with regards to, giving up the drink, even if it's for a temporary period of time or, you know, or for good or whatever the case may be, some people then revert to zero beers, and you can get all sorts of zero. I think you get zero wine now, I'm told. Don't know what that tastes like, but you can certainly get, Prosecco that isn't Prosecco. It's called No Secco. But anyway, Neil did the same, says Kian. Corona Zero is the one for me, but that Heineken Zero, I could never take to it. Cronin's Zero Cider and Corona Zero are two top zeros. Pass it on to people if they want to choose or try it out. If bars stocked anything other than Heineken Zero, they would sell an awful lot more. It's all in the eye of the taster. I actually think Heineken Zero on draft is fantastic. And I know people that absolutely love it and would find it difficult to even tell the difference between Heineken and Heineken Zero. And to be honest with you, Guinness Zero on draft isn't bad either. I mean, if nobody told you, apart from maybe you weren't getting a warm buzz if you had a few of them. But if nobody told you you were having a Heineken Zero or a Guinness Zero, I wonder would you know the difference. But anyway, and then lots on parking fines from this morning. CUH took away a lot of the staff parking for the purpose of a helipad. My daughter pays for parking in private driveways. She should be out here parking in Corraheen and the commercial park that we are because they're ferrying staff in constantly with shuttle buses. The MTU are looking to put parking charges onto their fees for everyone, even if you don't drive. I look into it. My daughter goes to NMCI, which is part of MTU, and they had a meeting about these proposed charges, says Claire. I'm living in Fuller's Road. Free parking for students? My ass. We have to pay to park outside my home. People need to get real. It was just a suggestion from a very distraught and financially burdened midwifery student at CUH, who's running up, I think in the course of a calendar year, at least €800 a year in parking fines. There's a car park next to the Kingsley. I think it's €7 for the day. Maybe Emma might work for her. It's close enough to UCC campus to walk. Morning, I'm a resident around UCC and I also attend UCC. Most of the students, Neil, I can tell you, are too lazy to walk. They block residence drives. They leave cars parked up for days on end, getting endless tickets. They should take responsibility and get a parking permit if they're renting around the place and park outside their own rented accommodation instead of outside our houses. People have been living there for 20 plus years. What the heck? Leaving their cars parked up for a day and getting endless parking tickets. I mean, can you just continue through your life to ignore unpaid parking tickets? I mean, it's not a criminal offence or anything. I mean, can you just keep on dodging paying them? And what happened? Would happen if you ran up huge amounts of parking tickets and fines and you never paid them? I think imagine eventually you get a knock on the door, ringing the bell, and on Garda Síochána turn up, don't they? Maybe if the cost of rent in houses and student accommodation prices weren't so damn expensive, there'll be less students having to drive up to UCC and take all of the parking. Rent prices and student accommodation in Cork is now beyond a joke. And then we were talking about charging Irish citizens abroad €800 to get them home. Des says, I'm somewhat shocked. The Constitution of Ireland states the government does not have a constitutional obligation to rescue its citizens from conflict zones. I don't know anything about that, Des, but he says we need a referendum to change that because charging citizens to get them out of a conflict zone is disgraceful, particularly when the government has $170 billion in the bank. And considering also that Simon Harris spent €600,000 renting private jets in his first 5 months in government, plus the five-star hotels. And now he's signing the checks as the finance minister. It goes to show they don't give a damn about their citizens if they charge them €800 to fly them home from conflict zones. So keep those coming. Text 0868 104 106. I know, Neil, of three women, two of them in their 40s and one in their 50s, and they were talking to me about drink. Not people with drink problems, but people who want to have more energy and feel better in themselves. You know, I feel people are all about health and wellness now. It makes a difference in their lives when they stopped drinking, they told me. Energy, health, happiness. I have to wonder, is it just habit? Is it a weekend thing that I must have a drink? It's dinner time, I must have a drink. I must have a drink because they're all having a drink, or because he or she is. And we all feel that we're put in situations where we actually have to drink. Well, I mean, even talking about it this morning, I think was it with Sarah? She got no grief whatsoever from any of her friends or buddies when she went out. In fact, the opposite happened. Orla. Sorry, my apologies, Orla. She went out and everybody's saying, well done, fair play to you, keep it up. So unless you try, you don't know what the reaction is going to be like. And I suppose they're not really solid, 100% decent friends if they're giving you grief of a night out because you've decided to give it up for a little while. Anyway, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. We've got calls, texts and emails on the way.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Be part of the conversation. Text 0868 104 106. Covering a lot of ground this morning again on lots of different topics. There's an interesting show actually featuring on Primetime. It's Primetime Reports and it's happening tonight. So what they did was they took a look at the Australian ban on teenagers with regards to under 16s using all sorts of different social media platforms because they changed the laws down there. Kate McDonald is Primetime reporter just ahead of the show tonight. She joins me by phone. Kate, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So you decided to take a group of students, right, and to take from them their most prized possession for a period of time. Was that the case?
That is the case. Yeah, it was very cruel, but we also asked them to do it during midterm. So it was,
difficult
time.
They were
brilliant.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. No, well, we wanted to look at, so, you know, obviously since Australia introduced their social media ban in December, there's been so much talk about a potential ban rolling out here. So we wanted to understand really, you know, what does social media actually mean to teenagers? You know, how would they feel if we took it away? And what would the benefits be? And, you know, do they think a ban would work?
Okay.
And so we asked five young people. So
Cork teenagers, incidentally.
Cork teenagers, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So they're all, they all know each other. They're 13 to 16 and they all know each other. They're in a Faroiga youth club in Durris in West Cork. So we asked them to take part in a 7-day trial and we used the Australian ban as a kind of template. So we asked them to delete the 10 apps that are involved.
10?
In that. 10.
10?
So 10.
Have you a
10
list?
Apps. I do. So TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Kick, Threads, X, and Reddit. So most of them don't really, like the apps that that this group actually use every day are TikTok and Snapchat, a bit of Instagram, a bit of YouTube, but TikTok and Snapchat are the main apps that they would use. So they were kind of going to be the toughest ones for them to stay off.
Right. Oh. I won't even ask. What do they use Snapchat and TikTok for? Communicating with friends, scrolling and things?
Exactly, yeah. So Snapchat was definitely the most popular app. And they use it to text, like they don't text and they don't use WhatsApp. So they text, they communicate and text their friends on Snapchat. So they would send pictures to each other. They build up these kind of streaks day by day, you know, where say if we were snapping each other over the course of a week, our streak would be 7 days. So one of the volunteers had a streak of over 1,000 days where she was snapping the same person for over 1,000 days, okay. Which is obviously a lot. So they're on Snapchat. That's how they communicate. You know, that's how they see what's going on. They're in the loop. They feel connected using that. And then TikTok, you know, one of them described it as kind of like a boredom buster. You know, they're scrolling on those platforms that are kind of more, you know, they've got those algorithmic features like Instagram and TikTok. They're just scrolling, watching videos and spending time on okay. those kind
yeah.
of platforms.
Yeah. Like, interesting, just as a sidebar to that, while they're doing that, I was reading some research last week that was talking about what they're also seeing by way of advertising that would be geared to their age group. I'm just curious as to whether you looked at any of that. They are bombarded during those periods with junk food ads, cheap shopping app ads, gambling ads, and things like that. So that's another kind of layer of worry, I suppose, isn't it?
Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, these concerns have been building for years and years about the kind of content that young people are seeing on these apps, especially the kind of the more addictive design features, the algorithm driven rabbit holes, so they can, you know, in terms of body image, in terms of bullying, you know, there's so many different concerns that have been building over the last few years. And that's obviously part of the reason why the people we're talking about introducing bans like this. Advertising is just part of that. You know, it's another issue that has been building. Did you look at their
screen time before they started? You know, their average daily and weekly consumption.
We did. So we looked at. So we went down during midterm and we asked them, you know, what they like about social media, what they dislike about social media, and they're really open about all of that. And you know, they do recognize that some of it's addictive, and you know, that they see stuff on there that they might not want to be seeing. So we got a sense of that from them, and then we had a look at their screen time. So it kind of varied from 2 to 6 hours a day on social media.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
the 6 hours a day, would that be kind of like 8 to 12s, 13 to 18s, or what?
So that was the kind of older cohort, so the kind of 15, 16 year olds,
and then the
13, 14 were more kind of 2 to 3 hours a day. Yeah.
That's like almost all of their waking time outside of school, right?
It is a lot of time. But then, you know, their kind of come back to that was, well, all the adults in our lives have similar screen times. You know, like we're all on our phones for a long time. And I think, you know, would be quite shocked. I'm shocked by my own screen time. But it is quite significant. And we tracked that over the week. And by the end of the week, their screen time had come down quite a lot. So the people who were kind of near 6 hours, they were down to 2. Like they had really cut it down. People who were more kind of 2 to 3 hours were down to 1. So it really...
What did they replace it with, though, Kate?
Yeah, so they did spend... So obviously some of the days were over midterm break. You know, they were kind of like, I did spend a bit more time playing sports. I did play a bit more. I was able to help on the farm a bit more, or whatever they were doing. They were out and about, but they were also playing. They were increasing their time gaming, which obviously aren't included in this particular social media ban, gaming platforms. So, you know, they weren't off limits. They were spending a little bit more time on them. You know, platforms like WhatsApp, which they'd never used before, really, except for to text their parents. They were using them a bit more to stay in contact with friends, because they couldn't be on Snapchat.
Yeah.
But one of the volunteers did crack.
She relapsed.
They were going to, on the Friday night, they had a Feroga ball, and she just wanted to see what who was going and, you know, what people were wearing and stuff like that. So she downloaded the apps again.
Yeah.
So she didn't last too long.
Yeah.
But the rest of them found it kind of okay. You know, they saw the benefits of it. They, you know, were able to spend time doing other stuff. But they were really happy with the screen time reduction. But they also said, you know, they were off school, they were filling the days. Like they did say that they felt disconnected, they felt, you know, lonelier, more isolated without the you know, the lifeline,
yeah,
their friends.
Yeah. No, because I can understand it from the point of view of the age group that you did the study with, because they will say, well, it was other generations created this technology. You made it available. Yeah. You gave it to us. We own it. We embrace it now. We're running with it. What do you want us to do? Do you know what I'm saying? This technology is of their time and it's of their era.
Exactly. It really is.
It's like a poison chalice kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and it is. It's just part of how they live. It's their environment, how they communicate. You know, it's very much part of their lives and would be very difficult so for them to properly give up. Now, obviously, the caveat, they were the only kids in their classes or in their groups that were off social media. So they did say, you know, if everybody was off this, it would have been easier because,
yes. You
know, there wouldn't be that kind of FOMO element. They wouldn't feel like they were missing out on stuff like that. So that's obviously a caveat. Then we did ask them about, you know, do you think a social media ban would work? And really interestingly, they were kind of like, not for our age group, you know, not from 13s and up, but yes, for 13s and under. Because, you know, most of the social media companies say that kids under 13 are not allowed onto the apps, but there's no age verification. So we know that, you know, kids as young as 8 are signing up as 13, 14 year olds and are on these social media apps. So their concern was for the younger cohort who are on these apps and seeing things they shouldn't be seeing.
I think that's brilliant that their age group can appreciate that if you can get it sorted at an earlier age, you will help. So that's quite an insightful, isn't it?
Yeah, no, they're really insightful and they're very, you know, they're very aware of the negative side of this, of social media. Do you know, like they were kind of saying that that there were downsides to it, that they could see the addictive nature and all that. So like they're very clued into, you know, the good parts of it, but also the more negative aspects of it as well.
But did they kind of wish that they weren't, in an ideal world, spending 6 or in some places 7 hours a day on it?
Yeah, I think that definitely came across. But like their issue then was, like, they were saying really interesting things as well around, you know, we asked them, who do you think is responsible for kind of creating a safer online environment for you guys? And they were kind of saying, well, I think it might be down to us because we're the ones on the phones, we downloaded the apps and we can put the phones away. We have that control, which was, I just found really interesting. And again, like just something I wouldn't have thought of, you know, obviously I would have thought that, you know, this is government, it's social media platforms, it's parents, it's this whole kind of push to make the environment safer. But they seem to be very aware of the risks and the dangers. But they also think that a ban for their age group just wouldn't work in practice. You know, they're kind of saying, we could use, you know, we could set up accounts before the ban. We could use older siblings, older friends to get past facial recognition checks. We could, you know, use VPNs. Like, they're unbelievably savvy.
They're very, very savvy. They are, yeah. They'd be one step. Exactly. We were all one step ahead when we were that age. We'd always find a way. Has it worked in Australia, though, the ban?
It is very early. So, you know, the figure that the Australian government would point to is 4.7 million accounts have been disabled since the ban came in of under 16-year-olds. So that obviously sounds very impressive now. But anecdotally, we're hearing loads of stories around, again, the same kind of ways that the court teenagers are saying they'd get around it.
People
finding a way, but, you know, that a lot of accounts didn't get flagged initially because they've been set up to appear like they're over 16 or people are using VPNs. They're getting around it. But it's very early days, and the e-safety commissioner over there, who's kind of leading this whole project, they announced a long-term study. So, you know, there's kind of the conversation now is, technically, does it work? Can you actually get them off the apps? But the longer-term idea of, you know, does it work in terms of improving mental health, in terms of changing lifestyles and behaviours and habits?
Yeah.
We won't know that for a couple of years. And they've just announced this long-term study, and they're going to track 4,000 families and kind of look at the outcomes in terms of education, mental health, all of that kind of stuff, so that you can actually see, you know, is a social media ban, you know, is it enforceable, but also, like, does it have the benefits that we presume it might have, which is interesting. But we won't know that those results for
something's,
for quite a while.
Something's got to give, though, because if you have 8 to 12-year-olds with no time limits on devices in their bedrooms, like, there's going to be issues down the track with low language development, poor vocabulary. You see less and less of them talking anymore now. If you see them in bunches or groups, they're literally all kind of like zombified on their phones. You know, it's also having huge impacts on their sleep patterns and concentration issues down the track, cognitively. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we actually, when we were filming down in the Farroga Club, they all voted to put their phones into a phone box. You know, so when they meet up every week, they don't have their phones. And one of the group leaders there was telling us that, you know, this is probably one of the only times where they socialize together outside school and they're not on their phones.
Yeah.
So, you know, but they voted for that. They wanted that time to, you know, to socialize, but also, you know, to not have the fear that something, if they do something stupid, that it's going to be filmed and put on Snapchat or whatever.
Yeah.
So they can just really relax and just be themselves and socialize and communicate and have fun.
Okay, sounds as if they're actually looking for help and asking for help or some kind of an intervention. So that airs tonight at 9:30. I don't want to give much away, but do you think that they will all just bounce back to their former screen time, or have they learned a lesson from it?
I think they also kind of said, you know, that their screen time probably would go up a little bit more, but that they'll try to keep it down, and they know how to do that now. Do you know, they're kind of, they've got some devices, some practice in trying to stay off the app. So hopefully.
Okay. Your thoughts are welcome, people. Text 0868 104 106. Primetime airs tonight, 9:30. Kate McDonald, primetime reporter and Clarity correspondent. Now, that's an interesting job, I would think. What is a Clarity correspondent, finally?
So Clarity is RTE's focus on misinformation. But, you know, as we were kind of talking there, you know, I'll be kind of focused on what's happening in these online environments on social media that, you know, is affecting our lives more and more these days. So could be anything. Like this week, I've been covering, you know, AI-generated deepfakes and online misinformation in the Middle East, you know, kind of analysing open source material and getting a better sense of what's happening on the ground. And then, you know, obviously doing the social media, looking at social media policy around the ban and stuff like that, and talking to young people who might be affected. So it's a wide brief, but very interesting.
It is, because you don't know what to believe now, what you see, what you hear, what you read anymore. So it is very important. Clarity matters. Okay, appreciate you taking the call. Thank you, Kate. That airs tonight on RTE1, primetime, 9:30. Have a good day. Thank you. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Your thoughts on that? Actually, it's actually quite disturbing, because the stats that Kate gave us are actually 100% right. In fact, they might even be a little on the low side. Teens, 13 to 18, the recommended screen time on a daily basis is supposed to be a maximum of 2 hours. I mean, I'm not here to judge anybody. Who am I to tell people how long they look at screens for? The recommended screen time for 13 to 18-year-old is supposed to be 2 hours. The actual average screen time for that age group, 13 to 18s, this is the amount of time they are actually on screens, is 7 hours and 30 minutes a day. 7 hours and 30 minutes a day on all sorts of different social media platforms and messaging and YouTube and shorts and everything. 7.5 hours every day. Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Yes, indeedy. If you can't jump on the air but you'd still like to contribute, there are many different ways to do so. You can also drop me a voice note. It's the same text line but on WhatsApp, 0868 104 106. Record your message and I'll play it to air. Here's one from this morning on parking.
Good morning, Neil. What about this for an idea? The people living in these areas, Bandon Road, Glasheen, have empty drives during the day or room for another car. What if they were to, like, rent a space, a car space, for the week, for the month, for students, and just pay, I don't know, €50, €100 a month, or whatever. And it's a win-win. The student wins, and they win. So I think it's a good idea. And I think that goes on in some parts of Dublin as well. Okay, later.
Yeah, I think it's a superb idea. I wonder, does it actually happen where people are renting their driveways? Some of the calls this morning were from people who don't have driveways and have people, students, they're saying, parking up outside their homes. And it also, that rose yesterday when we were talking about electric vehicles, people who don't have driveways. How would an EV car work? How would they charge it when they're on the street? But anyway, no, I think it's a great idea. Maybe it is already happening that people are literally renting out a space in their driveway to somebody who's parking up, going to work, going to college. I think the suggestion of €50 a month or €100 a month is probably on the light side. Probably €50 a week, maybe, that kind of way. But maybe it is happening. If it is, undoubtedly somebody will tell me. Text 0868104106. And now a voice note for you on phone use.
Hi, Neil. Sorry I can't come on there. It's Derek here in Toker. I think it's great what Australia did, and to hear that woman talking on the phone. I think it's before, it should have been way before that this topic came up. And this thing about... like, I had a constant battle with my son with all of this. And, like, when you're talking in front of somebody, to your son, and people say, oh, sure, look, that they all do that, Derek. That's the age. Like, it's such a defeatist attitude. It becomes too much of a normality for everyone to allow all this screen time for our children. Keep up the good work. Thanks for bringing up this topic.
Yeah, I 100% get what you're saying, but I was trying to make the point earlier on with Kate from Primetime that to some extent we created the technology, other generations developed it, and we gave it to our children. A lot of the time we probably gave it under protest, certainly smartphones at a particularly young age, but we certainly gave it to them. We put it into their hands and it has become part of their psyche. It's part of their thing. I mean, you look at any kind of generation going back along, we all had our things that were of the time. We happen to have created this and put it into their hands, and they're using it for 6 and 7 hours a day. So to some extent, we're responsible for creating that. It's a societal thing, really. Anyway, text 0868104106. Earlier on, I came across a screen grab from Clodagh, who's stuck in Dubai. She's a lovely girl. She's a former colleague of ours in the radio industry. But one of the things she was making a point of is that obviously she's stuck in Dubai, can't get a flight out, but her car's parked in a hotel car park in Dublin. Clodagh, good morning.
Morning, you.
So you gave them a call, was it? To let them know?
No, I emailed them on Monday or Tuesday just to say, as soon as I knew that I wasn't going to get back, that the situation, hoping that they would show, you know, some goodwill and say, oh, don't worry about it. You know, just get back safe and there'd be no extra fees.
And the response was nay.
The response was, yeah, don't worry about it. We'll just charge you the €7 a day extra for each day that you stay over. There's no problem.
Oh, so what do you mean the €7 a day extra? Is it €7 per day?
Yeah, so we've paid up to Monday. We were meant to be back Monday morning. And obviously every hour or every 24 hours that we overstay, I think they said it would be an additional €7 charge per extra day that we're in the car park outside of our allocated time.
So is it just €7 per extra day? Or is it on top of an already exorbitant fee for car parking in a hotel plus €7?
Well, we've already paid the, I think it was just under €90 we paid to stay there originally. So then I'd imagine it's either €7 extra a day or €7 extra per 12 hours. I don't know how they work it, because I went back on for clarity saying, God, you know, I'm a bit disappointed with that message. I would have hoped, considering the situation, there wouldn't be any extra fees. And I haven't heard back from them since.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you could be there. You could be there. I mean... What's it like in Dubai at the moment? You could technically be there for a week or weeks.
Yeah, there's plenty of people trying to get back, and that's the issue. And they're only opening the air corridor to a certain amount of flights per day. And obviously, as you can imagine, there's people from every country in the world trying to get home and every airline trying to fly out. So I don't know when I will get out, but life here is as normal. Dubai are doing a great job in not over panicking anybody, keeping everybody calm. Yeah. It's business as usual. Everything is open. You know, it's not, no one is fearful over here. It's very relaxed and calm.
Okay, so it's a big change from Monday when I was talking to Corkonians that were caught in the likes of Dubai, who were sleeping in the hotel car parks on inflatable mattresses with duvets and things. Yeah.
Totally. Well, my sister lives here, so I'm staying in her villa, and we're right by the airport. And to be fair, when that was hit and stuff, that was quite scary because we very much felt it here. But once that was over, and they're intercepting a lot of them, so you don't even hear them. But once that initial kind of first night was done, it's been very calm ever since.
Yeah. And I suppose the more I think of it, whether it was €70 a day or €7 a day, it's the principle you're talking about. You know, you can't get back. You would think that a company would say, we understand that. You've got other things going on. Stay safe. And when you get back here, your car will be waiting for you. Do you know what I mean? The principle of it, if you like.
Absolutely. Totally. It's like the show of good faith. You know, it's completely out of my control. On top of your car parking, you leave all your extra fees to be here. They don't know that I'm not staying in a hotel. It's not costing me extra money on top of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one less worry that they would be like, don't worry, stay safe, and your car is fine here. That's what I would have expected.
Yeah, because you've got the keys and everything, do you? You probably have the chit for the car park. Somebody can't go up and collect the car for you or anything like that.
Unfortunately, no, we have the keys.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. What do you make of the 18, the 800 charge? Are you aware that there are some flights being chartered, but it's €800 a head?
Yes, I was on to my counsellor in Passage West, Owen Fahey, asking him about some information. He came back to me and said about the €800. I nearly choked. I was drinking a cup of tea at the time. I just couldn't believe it. I thought, that's so Irish. Every other country would just put the flight on to get their citizens back safe, not then ask them to pay for it.
And do we know that to be the case? Are other countries just getting people out, getting their citizens out and not charging them?
I don't have any information on that, but I would imagine, I mean, it seems a bit Irish, you know. Yeah, we're putting on these flights. Yeah. Look at us, we're great. But actually not telling the world that they're charging them €800 per person to do it.
To be quite honest with you, I think you're right when you put it like that. If it is a time of need and there is war and it's an unsafe part of the world and they're telling people not to travel and to come home, they should be part of the solution and bring people home without a charge, right? I think you're right there. I really do. The UK are charging as well, though. I think the UK are charging So if the UK are charging £400, which isn't far off €400, why in the name of God would we be charging twice that anyway?
And you still have to make your way to Oman, which is about a four and a half hour drive. So you'd have to rent a car as well on top of it.
I think
not even just your 800.
I think, to be fair now and to be accurate on them from the point of view of clarity, they are busing people and covering the cost of the buses. So at least that's something. But no, I mean, in the times that we're in now, and where you are and where other people are and want to get home but can't, it's the government and the country should be getting them home and should not be charging them. I agree with you. I really do. So how are you spending your time then in this extended stay?
I'm trying to do work from my sister's laptop. I didn't bring mine with me, but sure, I'm up every day and just trying to stay on top of work, really. And then in and out of the sun, it's a very relaxing way to do my job.
Okay, so life is just going on as normal.
Totally.
Okay. And who knows how long more you'll be there? Any idea at all?
Well, because we're on staff tickets, because my sister's crew is Emirates, it's kind of they're giving the priority, obviously, to people who are stuck in hotels and are costing money, you know, people who are sick. So although we're booked on a flight tomorrow, there's no guarantees we can get on that flight tomorrow because there is only just one flight a day going.
Okay.
So we're hopeful for tomorrow. Fingers crossed.
All right, fingers crossed.
Candles lighting. My mother has holy God candles lighting all over the place.
Every little helps.
Yes.
Safe trip whenever it happens, Clodagh. Nice catching up. Take care for now.
Thanks.
All the best. Clodagh in Dubai. Text 0868 104 106. How are we doing time-wise? Yeah, we're good. We've got about 12 minutes. So I think Niamh's standing by. Pick up on that after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. Text 0868 104 106. And if you look at the 6 or 7 hours per day, I hope I'm not harping on about it, a lot of that has to do with the dopamine release that they get, that kind of addictive feeling of more and more and more, and the sensations that you get. It's all tied into the brain and all of the chemical messages that are going about with regards to dopamine. And that itself then can be firing on overdrive. amongst young people in their brains and right through their bodies. Text 0868104106. One of the stories I mentioned earlier on this morning is Carrigaline Community Special School. It remains closed. There was an incident on February the 26th in which staff sustained injuries. It's been put down, and the quote is that injuries to staff which occurred where children have become dysregulated. That was a word that I looked up this morning, the word dysregulated. And it means where your internal thermostat for emotions and stress is broken. You know, it's like being inside a window or outside a window, or what's going on inside of your body is different to, you know, what happens when you become dysregulated, where you become to a state of maybe hyperactivity in the brain, then leads to anxiousness, becoming overwhelmed, angry or manic. And then I suppose that then can lead to people, unfortunately, as we would say about adults, kicking off. I'm quite sure it would be different through the prism of young people with special needs. But for whatever reason, the school is closed. Niamh, good morning.
Good morning, Neil, and thank you for having me on.
Can you explain a little more? I don't know whether you're in a position to tell us more about what happened and why.
I'm not really. I just know a child got dysregulated and staff got injured.
Yeah.
And what I would say is that our children in the school, they all are autistic and yeah. they all have an intellectual disability yeah. and that's why they're in a special school.
Yeah. And we understand that it would be outside of the control yeah. of the children, 100%.
Yeah, it's part of that dual diagnosis.
Yeah.
So, but it's expressed differently. Each child is unique. So some children, when they're dysregulated, they go in on themselves and they would be very quiet and sitting crying, you know. Other children might hit their heads.
Yeah.
Other children might stim and need to jump or need to run around. Yeah. Other children, if you get too close to them, it's like their need for personal space increases
yeah.
when they're dysregulated. Yeah. So if you got too close, they might just lash out.
Okay, okay. And you have explained it really, you know, really well. Yeah. And I'm glad that you did explain it that way. It's the proper way. But ultimately then it led to staff safety, was it?
Yeah, I believe what we've been told is that there were staff that sustained injuries, which is awfully sad and unfortunate. And it just points to the fact that our staff and our children need proper supports in this school. And I'm also very upset that the CETB took such an extreme measure of closing the school.
Okay, that's the Cork Education and Training Board. But were there other incidents in the past, I'm wondering, of which this was the more recent?
There would be incidents in the school. Now, obviously, like, you know, for GDPR reasons and all of that, parents wouldn't be privy to that unless their child had witnessed or was involved in such an incident. So, like, I'm not able to speak for that, you know. But when you have a student, there's 48 students in the school, so in some ways it's a very small school. But when you have children who've been deprived of services all of their lives, proper services now, not piecemeal, all of their lives, then unfortunately this is going to be part of the picture,
yeah.
which is why we need support.
And tell me this, how is your son coping not being in school?
Oh, it's a mixed picture. I mean, he's in very good form for 1 hour, you know, and he's just beginning to get restless now today. His sleeping has changed, which is not great because he's unlike many autistic children, my fella's a fantastic sleeper. Loads of them are not. But his routine is off. And sometimes he communicates with me. He is verbal, but it wouldn't be typical verbal, you know, like in your typical child. Sometimes he sends me text messages on his phone during the day, like I'm in the house with him.
Yeah,
you know,
they all do that, girl. They're all doing that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I know. So, like, this morning now, I got one, and it's he's great at writing, you know. And he said, I'm furious. I'm stay at home. And he doesn't ever use the word because, right? But that's what he means.
Yeah.
I'm furious because I'm staying at home.
Yeah.
But it's worse. He has significant anxiety anyway. And now I'm worried about, like, I'm worried about that this will affect his confidence in the routine going forward.
And routine's
but
so important.
But it's also affected. Yeah, it's affected his anxiety because he's now saying to me that various people are, he thinks something terrible has happened to them because school is not happening. He thinks they're dead, Neil.
He thinks the worst. Oh, the poor fella.
Yeah.
Thinks the worst.
Yeah.
But Mammy's there to help him navigate through that, that's not the case.
But you see, I can't navigate through that because I'm helping him as much as I can. He's not reassured until he sees them alive.
Ah, yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? So I'm just trying to distract him.
Yeah. So that's your. Yeah. So that's your. Actually, just on the point of that, because you said in part of the text, some parents are housebound as their kids couldn't manage even a trip to the supermarket. So you feel for others as well as your own situation.
Oh my God, absolutely. I mean, like some children wouldn't be able to manage being in the supermarket. Do you know what I mean? Therefore, their parents can't go there today or take them on those kind of trips. There's other children then in the siblings and families that need to be brought to and from school.
Yeah.
And the autistic child might have huge difficulty sitting outside waiting. You know, waiting is always an issue.
No, it's a disaster.
There's the work issue. Do you know, there's parents now worried about losing their jobs. And
could that happen? Could that literally happen that somebody has taken time off and you're saying they've taken a lot of time off already now and they could well be getting...
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've used up your holiday leave and your sick leave and your force majeure leave, like, you know, you have to have an understanding boss. And the boss are looking at they're looking at their bottom line and all of that. It is very anxious for some parents, you know.
Did you speak to any parents that feel that the hammer might fall at work kind of thing?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Oh my
God. I mean, the sentence was, I'm waiting for a P45. That's what one parent said to me.
As if they haven't enough to get on with and contend with.
Yeah. And like, you know, so it's very upsetting. I'm very upset that the CEPB have taken this extreme measure because it doesn't happen in other special schools. So what is wrong with our schools?
But what if I was to say to you maybe... What if I was to say to you maybe, and they're saying that the closure is having an impact because of the closure, the impact that led to the closure was on the health and well-being of staff because there was a high level of staff injury leave in the school as a consequence that literally staff is out with injury or on sick leave because of it.
Yes, I mean, I assume that is happening and has happened and that is, nobody wants that. People get sick to their stomachs hearing that. Parents do, you know. The other thing though is special schools all over the country deal with that awful problem and don't close their school.
Deal with it better.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, they're dealing with it in some way. I don't know how, but clearly our school, like there's something going quite wrong such that our school isn't.
You say 45 can't. Students, you're saying, yeah?
48.
And is there a meeting tonight then with the school?
There is. There's a meeting. The CETB have invited parents to a meeting. Maybe they'll explain more clearly because we were hearing day by day whether the school was going to be open or not, which was
having a huge impact on the students. It really is because they need the routine.
Yeah.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, they do.
Without a doubt.
And this is a red line issue for the Taoiseach. About getting therapists into schools. And we've been looking, in our school, we've been advocating for a full-time behavioural therapist for years. And it's like, we're in crisis. We need a crisis response now because this is just awful.
They need to sit up and take this.
Staff, and it's awful for children.
Yeah, they need once and for all just to sit up and take this seriously. I mean, I was talking with people earlier in the week with the new campaign, Before I Die, which I think you're actually a member. You joined that group, didn't you?
Brilliant organisation. Yeah.
But isn't it terribly, terribly sad that you have many people who've joined Before We Die because their parents of children with special needs or issues in their life and they worry about them after they after the parent might die or pass away. It's awfully sad.
Sure, yeah, we're already worried sick about it. You know, our chap is 17, and I'm just so grateful that this group has started up and that we can maybe all advocate together. Because, look, like, our children are not being treated right and have not for all of their lives. And then as they become adults, they're not getting what they deserve either, and nor are the families.
No.
The stress, the financial impact, and knowing, like, it's very hard to keep believing you can change when you continually just get talk and not action, you know?
Without a doubt. Hopefully tonight give some clarity and some kind of roadmap back to getting the children what they need most, and that's their routine and their friends and the settings that they're familiar with. All right. Do say, will you come back to me maybe tomorrow morning, Niamh? Let me know how tonight goes.
I will do.
All right.
I will do. And thank you very much for giving us the time.
All right. More than happy. Niamh O'Grady, thank you. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Let me just give you an example of many emails that I got in following my conversations earlier in the week with people of the organization Before We Die. I'm a mother of a teenager with Down syndrome, and I'm so worried about what the future holds for my child, especially once my husband and I are gone. I've always encouraged my other children to live their own lives and travel and work abroad if they like, but the reality is they will need to care for their sibling when we're gone. It will be an enormous ask. I hope the Before We Die campaign changes things for the better so that our government steps in and takes action for our children in need, and they can have independent, full life, the life they deserve as citizens. We need houses in our localities. We need facilities for our children to learn to live independently as they can once they become adults, so there isn't a mass upheaval once us, the parents, die. Don't give up my details, but I hope you get to read this out. That's just from another worried parent on behalf of herself and her husband as to what happens to a teenager who grows up and we get older, and the teenager is living with Down syndrome. And who will mind my children? Have a good day. Kira Evans is next, and I'll see you tomorrow.